There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti. We're up here on the rooftop garden, and we won't lie, it is a little bit warm, but there is a beautiful breeze as well. Sun's beginning to set as well, so we're coming into that perfect, it's the witching hour, isn't it, Ross Crist?
Yeah, it's exactly right, and guess what? Just I hear right behind me on the ones and twos holophonics down there at the pool right
they're
now.
They're down there, are they?
Yeah, they're down there mixing it up, so the pool looks lively, to say the least. If there is a way I could dip out of this show at least 2 hours early and hop on in the swimmers and go down there, I would.
Not possible. I've got one goal to bring you. That's over in Spain at the moment. The three games are underway in the world of football. Early kickoff in Spain is Espanyol against Las Palmas. Just started the second half there. It's Las Palmas who lead Espanyol by one solitary goal to nil. No goals in Scotland, and Mark Archer, no goals in the Premier League.
No, 35 minutes gone at Anfield. Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0. To be fair, Liverpool haven't looked quite on the pace that we've seen them in the last couple of weeks. Obviously, their mind and bodies are probably elsewhere thinking about that return Champions League semi-final leg in Rome. But Mo Salah's had a couple of chances after we talked him up before the match, looking like he can't miss. He's actually had a one-on-one chance with Jack Butland. He missed after 5 minutes. And he's just put a free kick past the left-hand post from a pretty good distance out there as well. Stoke have had a couple of chances, a couple of harsh chances to Duif, who headed past the post there. But at this stage, hasn't been much in it between both teams. Hasn't been a great game of football, to be honest. It's 35 minutes gone at Anfield. Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0.
Golf-wise, we've got the China Open. We'll tell you about in just a little while. But what's going on over in the United States? What's this? What is this? It's the classic, isn't it?
It's the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. But if you're from Louisiana, you'd say Nolens. And this is a team event, second round complete. Michael Kim and Putman at 13 under. They're chased by a team of Kaiser Brown at 12 under, Campbell Jones at 11 under, also Lashley Oppum. There's also some bigger names also in this tournament for you, Tommy. Team of Rose and Stenson, Henrik Stenson, they're at 8 under, so they're in swinging distance. Zach Johnson and Bird also at 8 under. I see some Bubba Watson and Cooch, Big Cooch, at 9 under. So this is a team event, Tom. Everyone seems like within striking distance. 13 under is the lead. And just about everyone's still a couple shots back, so this could get tasty here in the third round.
That's what's happening on the PGA. What about the European art? How does China come into the European tour?
Oh, China's open territory. I think they have a PGA Tour event there, and they also have a European Tour event in China. So, no, live scoring, it's the Volvo China Open taking place this weekend. Round three is now completed. I'll give you a quick leaderboard as it comes through here on my PC. Don't know if you have the scores there, Tom.
Don't worry, we'll get those as and when.
No, here we go. It's Adrian Ortega is leading. He is 5 under par for his round today. And total of 12 under par he is with the Englishman Matt Wallace. So Ortega from Spain, Matt Wallace from England is 12 under par. One-shot lead from three players, Jorge Campillo, Julian Guerrier, and Alexander Bjorg back at 11 under par. So it's fair to say many of the big-name players are still, the big European players are still over playing on the PGA Tour this week. It's not the strongest of fields at the Volvo China Open, but yeah, round three underway. This event's in Beijing.
Let's turn our attention to cricket. Bad weather in the United Kingdom has washed out a number of the county games that have taken place down there. One game that is underway down on the south coast is Kent against Pakistan. The Pakistan team have landed. They've started their warm-up ahead of their series against England. Not going all their way there at the moment. Obviously trying to get used to the conditions down on the south coast. Pakistan are batting. It's day one of a multi-day match, four-day game. They're 79 for 3 against Kent. A couple of wickets for Gidman and one for Podmore as well, currently at the crease for the tourists. Imam on 37 not out, and Shafiq's just joined him, 2 not out as well. So not a huge amount of cricket over in the county championships, but plenty of cricket over in India.
Yeah, there is. There's IPL action underway. We're halfway point of the IPL season, and it's this match this evening's in Pune. The Chennai Super Kings 5 wins from 6 games sees them top of the table with 10 points, taking on the bottom place team, Mumbai Indians, the defending champions, having a terrible season to date, only 1 victory from 6 matches. They are at the bottom of the IPL table, so it's a must-win match for Mumbai to give them a chance of moving up the table this afternoon. All the action gets underway, 6:30 UAE time. Let's just have a quick listen to a preview of this match tonight in the IPL. Chennai Super Kings hosting the Mumbai Indians.
It's high time for the Mumbai Indians to try and turn around their season if they want to stay in contention. Chennai Super Kings will be boosted in the manner that in which they chased down a big score at Bangalore led by MS Dhoni. It's the fixture that kicked off the IPL 2018 in such grand style. It's the reverse fixture. It's closer to Mumbai than it is to Chennai because it's at the MCS Stadium in Pune. Ajit Agarkar and Sean Tate with me to look ahead to it. Recent form would suggest Chennai, but you can never know when Mumbai start firing, isn't that
fair? Sure, yeah, exactly. A bit of a home game for them, just down the road. but depending on traffic in Mumbai, obviously. but they're going to be hungry for this win, surely. This is their most important game of the tournament, and they're a very good team on paper. I think they'll be coming out really hungry for this one.
It almost makes it harder to pick their 11, but I'll come to that in a bit. Ajit, confidence, big thing at this time in the season. Chennai will be very confident after the way they chased down the runs against Bangalore. Mumbai, on the other hand, not chasing 118 against Hyderabad at the 1 crore, could hit you. Not just the defeat, but the manner of the defeat.
It will be, I think. And now you know every loss, you're closer to being out of the tournament, even though they still have a chance and they've done it before. Their big players need to step up. I think Rohit needs to have another big game, which he usually does when their chips are down. Needs to bat a bit higher. It was a close one against Chennai. I think Bravo's individual brilliance beat them in the first game. They'll want to turn that around.
Okay, now let's see if Ajit has made any changes to the Mumbai 11. Normally, after you get bowled out for 81, you think most franchises would try and change things up, especially when they've been losing before that. And I can see there are a couple of changes. You've making a big call to drop Kyron Pollard, more on reputation than recent form, the big call. And Adam Milne for Mitchell McClanahan. Otherwise, I don't see anything else around. Thoughts, Ajit?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm not leaning Mumbai Indians, so that won't happen. But no, I just feel, one, he's a left-hander. There's a left-arm spinner and a leg spinner in the Chennai squad. Might help. Their bowling's not their strongest. JP Dumini can do a job down the order for them. Adam Milne might give them something different. A little bit of speed, bit of skittiness might help, you know. It's a tough one between McClanahan and Mustafizur. But Adam Milne, I just feel, is a right arm quick. I know they've got Bumrah and Hardik Pandya, but especially Bumrah. But I think Adam Milne might just give them something different. So, look, it's a really strong team that they have. So I won't be surprised if they have the best game tomorrow night.
I mean, you think Mumbai is not the team to change much. And dropping someone like Pollard has always been something that they've been reluctant to because of the loyalty factor. But do you agree with Ajit? It's time they do change something?
Yeah, I think so. We've spoken about that a lot the last period. I think that's probably a good option, to be honest. And just change things up again in that middle order there. And I think, like you said, I think scenes on Mumbai now, with a couple of little changes like this, Milne is quick. He's a good bowler, so I think they're going to be pretty hard to beat, you know.
Almost use Hardik Pandya a little bit differently. He's batting at number 7, sometimes 8, you know, comes and slogs a couple. You may as well use him up top to go hard, what a Pollard does. So maybe find a role for him a bit better.
Interesting. All right, what about Chennai Super Kings? And no matter who they chop and change with, they seem to get the result or the job done. Does Sean Tate make any changes to the side that beat RCB at the Chinnaswamy? It's a toss-up between two former Mumbai boys, and Harbhajan Singh and Karan Sharma. And there are plenty of old Mumbai Indians warriors, and Ambati Rayudu and Dwayne Bravo, who've done so well this season. So just looking at that team, the only one is whether you would play the two leggies in Sharma and Tahir, or stick to Harbhajan. Thoughts, Steady?
Yeah, I think Harbhajan, I think he only bowled one or two overs last game, two overs maybe, so he hasn't been used that much. It's great to have him in the side because of his experience and presence, but I think Mumbai, okay, Dumini's in the team now, but right-handers, you don't buy too much into the right-hand, left-hand spinning stuff, but captains do that. The only thing is, I suppose, Dhoni, once you win a game and you get a bit of momentum, he doesn't like to change things too much. We speak about that a bit, so who knows.
Very well. Tough one to call. Is anyone willing to call it on the eve? Mumbai or Chennai?
I'm going to go Mumbai this
one. I'm going to go Mumbai. Chennai has obviously played better and played some of the big moments well. But Mumbai on paper is a better team than Chennai.
All right, fine. Teddy, you go with that?
I'm going to go with Mumbai, yeah.
Wow, all right. So both Ajit and Sean think that in spite of recent form and recent results, Mumbai probably hold the slight advantage, at least if you look at their squad, against the Chennai Super Kings when the both teams take off in what's the only fixture on Saturday in the IPL.
Those are the thoughts of the IPL, which is ongoing at the moment. In other news, of course, we had the draw for the World Cup earlier on this week. Archie, any big names or big clashes to come out of that draw?
Well, there always is. Of course, the ICC announced this is only a 10-team event like other World Cups where they've had 14 teams. So it's all the big teams going head-to-head. It's going to get underway next year in the UK, of course, and ECB during the week announced all the fixtures in the venue. So Lords will host the final. No surprises there. The home of cricket will host the final of the Cricket World Cup on the 14th of July. Semi-finals are at both Old Trafford and Edgbaston, so no surprises there. First match of the tournament sees the hosts England. They will face South Africa at the Oval on May the 30th. My birthday, Tom, so let's head over to England and go to the Oval and watch that tournament get underway.
I'm up there. I'll be your wingman, Archie. Yep, no problem at all.
And then
fly me out, mate.
Other matches to note. Australia begin their title defence in a day-night match against Afghanistan in Bristol on June the 1st. And, of course, the big one that everyone will be talking about and will stop a lot of people in their tracks is India taking on Pakistan. It's at Old Trafford on June the 16th. So mark your cards for that match wherever you are. That's a big match in the world of sport when those two teams come together on the cricket field. So India taking on Pakistan at Old Trafford, June the 16th next year. That will be a match, but it's a 10-team event. So each team will play a 9-round-robin matches, play pretty much everyone, and then they'll go into a sort of a playoff pool there. So that's the ICC Cricket World Cup draw. This is what the former English Test batsman Mark Butcher had to say about the big matches and who to look out for in the next year's draw.
The fixtures have been officially announced for the World Cup in 2019, England's first chance to host a World Cup since 1999. Here are the five matches. The tournament opener is England playing South Africa at the Oval. Owen Morgan's men are favourites to carry off their first ever world title in 50-over cricket. Will they be able to justify that tag, or will they fluff their lines? The South Africans will not be a pushover, that's for sure. Champions in qualifying, Afghanistan will get the chance to take on serial world champions Australia in their opening match on June the 1st. A real chance for the Afghanistan team to show that they belong in such rarefied company. Mohammad Nabi, Rashid Khan and co. will have their work cut out, but they very rarely disappoint when it comes to entertainment. Old Trafford will be the venue for perhaps the tie of the tournament, India taking on Pakistan on June the 16th. It's a game that is never to be missed and a repeat of the Champions Trophy final. Which team will come out on top? One thing's for sure, passions will run high. Old Trafford is once again the venue for a match in which the cricket may well take a back seat to the subsets surrounding some of the players. David Warner and Steve Smith are potentially back for Australia against the South African team in which they lost their places in the side. Will these two teams rub each other up the wrong way? Cricket fans in the North East have not had a great deal to smile about in the last couple of years. However, the tie that pitches host England against New Zealand should bring a smile to those Geordie faces. Don't forget, it was New Zealand's visit just after the World Cup that spurred England into action as being the favourites to win the 50-over World Cup. Expect some fireworks. Those are only five selections. There were 48 games in 46 days and 11 venues. There were plenty of matches to choose from. Wherever you go, be sure to see some fabulous cricket.
This is The Grill. Get involved with Dubai Eye on Facebook.
Yeah, game on. Indeed, plenty to look forward to throughout the remainder of the show. We're going to be touching base with the team, and probably is a proper team, from Dubai College. You're going to be joining us to tell us all about their rather significant celebrations that they are celebrating this year, and plenty of events to look forward to. So we'll be hearing from them very shortly. Let's get some halftime scores, though, for you. No goals up in Scotland. Hamilton against Ross County. Halftime there, 0-0. Is that the same case down at Anfield? Mark Archer.
Yeah, early kickoff in the English Premier League this afternoon is in Anfield. It's Liverpool taking on Stoke City, and the score at halftime, Tom, is is 0-0. Couple of good chances to Mo Salah, the man who doesn't seem to be able to miss at the moment, but he has missed a couple of good chances, and they have had a goal disallowed for offside just before half-time. Danny Ings put a good finish in from a tight angle past Jack Butland, but it was disallowed because he scored in an offside position. So it has been a great game. It looks as though Liverpool are a little bit off the pace, but that's probably understandable after their effort midweek against Roma at home, and obviously their minds are probably thinking about that second away leg in the Champions League semi-final this week. So half-time at Anfield, Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0.
Let's turn attention to boxing. Obviously, Ramir Khan back in the ring, albeit for about 90 seconds last weekend. But he's got his bid to get back to his best back underway. Meanwhile, all sorts going on outside the ring with this so-called AJ and Wilder fight. It's the fight that everyone wants to see. Seems to be a bit of discrepancy, though, from both camps as to who's worth what. Let's hear first from Eddie Hearn, the promoter for Anthony Joshua.
Well, it's all very bizarre, Adam. I returned the email of Deontay Wilder and said, we're very interested to make this fight. Please send us a draft contract. And he replied and said, you have to accept the fight and then we'll send you a contract. I've never known anything so bizarre since I've worked in boxing. I had a meeting with Shelley Finkel scheduled for Thursday. He cancelled that meeting. I requested a meeting for today, and he emailed me, whilst also emailing the entire press world, to say that there's no point in meeting, it would be non-productive. We have to accept the deal first. Sometimes it's always nice to call someone's bluff, and what we have done is called their bluff here, and they won't even meet to talk about the deal. It's bizarre. But we're talking to other people as well. There's probably about 50 people trying to make this deal at the moment. You've got Shirley Winkle, you've got Al Heyman, you've got Jay Diaz, you've got other people. When I was on the stage up there, I had two texts from people I hadn't spoken to for about a year saying, I can help you make this fight. I think you also told me you could help me make this fight. So, look, we asked for a meeting to try and talk about the offer. They rejected it. We asked for a contract. They rejected it. I don't know what more we can do. We will continue trying, but I believe that the boxing world has realised that this was a PR stunt turned PR disaster. We do want the fight. Conversations continue, but I think, as Dominic Brazil tweeted this morning, I have been told I am fighting Deontay Wilder in August. So maybe the whole thing was a little bit of profile building for Deontay Wilder. We hope not. We want the fight. We'll see.
Eddie Hearn giving his side of the story there. Only fair that we hear from the Wilder camp as well. Shelley Finkel was mentioned there. She's one of the promoters for Deontay Wilder. Let's get their thoughts now.
We made an offer to Joshua to fight Deontay in his next fight, and we offered him $50
million. $50 million coming from where? Where's the guarantee? Where's the money from?
He accepts it, it will be there. Al Heyman and I have never not delivered what we offered.
So how did it come? In the form of an email?
Or? Yes, we sent an email to Eddie Hearn, Rob McCracken, and Anthony Joshua.
And this is based on the fact that Anthony said, 50 million, and I take the fight?
Correct.
£50 million is what he's telling us.
That is not what the interview says. And we were offered $12.5 million, £8.8 million to fight. We've offered him four times that. If he's saying he's not going to take $50 million, then he didn't really want to fight him next because he's getting 50% anyway. So it was $50 million against 50%.
And it's $50 million... take it or leave it, and an answer within 24 hours?
Correct.
And that's it? There's no more developments?
Nope. He said it. He said, get me $50 million against 50%. He said, and I'll take it the next day, I swear.
So, obviously there's been confusion in the pounds, dollars.
Not on my side. I made an offer. He can either accept it or not. He said $50 million. That's more than double he's ever made. He wants to fight. That's it.
Shelley Finkel there, promoter for Deontay Wilder, or Eddie Hearn, as described it, Shirley Winkle. So Shelley Finkel, Shirley Winkle, Eddie Hearn, sort this one out for me, please.
Boy, Shelley Finkel putting me to sleep there. He needs an upgrade in the voice department. Shelley, go see your voice coach, my friend. So here's how we got here, Tom. These two heavyweights, one of them has a belt. The other one has three belts. One's in your neck of the woods. One's in my neck of the woods. This is going to be a mega fight. Both of these guys coming in undefeated. Amazing boxers. So here's where we're at right now. AJ is the A side of the coin right now. Even though Wilder has a better record, AJ's certainly a bigger name right now, bigger global brand. So he is what you'd say the A side of the ring. So Eddie Hearn, who represents AJ, came over to Wilder and offered him $12.5 million. That's about 9 million pounds, a flat fee, offering him to fight this month. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, Eddie Hearn and AJ, everyone that follows the boxing circle knows no one's going to take that. Now, $12.5 million is a lot of money to me, you, and Mark right here, but this fight is going to generate over $100 million. So that's, what, 12%? That's almost laughable. So Eddie Hearn actually knew when he did that. It was basically kind of just like a PR move to try to start the dialogue between the teams. Then you see Shelley Finkel comes back and says, hey, we're going to offer your fighter $50 million. So, of course, he doesn't have $50 million in the bank. He's assuming that this fight's going to generate over $50 million. He mentioned Al Haymon. Al Haymon is a man that has $50 million in his bankroll, and he offered it to AJ, and it seems like there's a little bit of a mix-up there between pounds, the exchange rate, you know, think that what time the market closed at, who knows, Mr. Shelley Finkel. But where they're at right now, here's how I see it. I've been actually watching this one closely, and I know I'm going to sound a little bit like a homer right now, but I actually truly believe right now, I think Deontay Wilder has put himself out there. He will sign on the dotted line if there's a fair deal. I think AJ is the one who's a bit hesitant right now. I think AJ wants one more fight before this fight. I think he wants one more under his belt.
I thought he had a mandatory for one of his belts. He has to fight someone to keep one of the belts. Not that that's the biggest deal that has to happen, but he has a mandate, which might be a good excuse for him. He's got to fight this mandatory in maybe 3 or 4 months' time, and then he can fight on his terms as a triple belt holder. And whatever happens, Ross, look, this fight's going to get done, right? And when this fight happens, it's probably the biggest fight in boxing. We had Pacquiao Mayweather, which was a bit of a damp squid a couple of years ago. But this is the genuine heavyweight division, the bellwether division of boxing, and this will be the biggest fight in the decade, I think.
100%. These big boys going at it. This will be a huge, huge fight. Now, you heard Shelley Finkel talk there. You heard Eddie Hearn talk there. Brazil's name got mentioned in there. He's someone who might fight Wilder if AJ takes someone else before this fight. I personally think AJ will take one more person before this fight. Then one other guy who came out in a presser this week that would get a big, big, big mega fight, Mr. Tyson Fury, who's back in the gym. He's ready. He said Dante Wilder's comments about his weight and saying that he doesn't have the passion, the drive to be in the ring anymore, fueled him to get back in the ring. He gave us one of his best pressers this past week in his hometown gym. He's been training in Marbella. He's been training in England. He looks good. If AJ beats Wilder, that would be the next big mega fight. And we're in for a treat here for the next, half dozen years in heavyweight boxing, something we haven't been able to say the last 2 decades.
It is fast approaching 4:30. Do stay tuned. You're listening to The Grill, broadcasting live from Barassi. We're up here on the rooftop garden, and we are joined by the team from Dubai College. We're going to be catching up with Dubai College students present and past. Also, those from the teaching faculty will be joining us and giving us their thoughts. They are celebrating a rather significant milestone at the moment, so we'll get all the thoughts from Dubai College and speaking to some rather special sporting alumni. That's coming up next.
Let's go!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
The Grill, broadcasting live from Barasti, where the game is always on. A player's back out on the field for the second half of the early kickoff in the Premier League. Mark Archer's watching this one for us, Liverpool against Stoke.
Yeah, this is live from Anfield. We're just seeing Jurgen Klopp walk back onto the pitch here. Big week for Liverpool, great win in that semi-final of the Champions League, but 0-0 half-time at Anfield. Couple of good chances to Mo Salah. He's put everything away in the last 3 months or 4 months, but he's missed a couple of good chances. One goal has been disallowed to Danny Ings just before half-time. He was in an offside position. He put the ball past Jack Butland. So going into the second half here, it's just about to kick off at Anfield. Liverpool 0, Stoke City 0.
Right, want to turn our attention now to our special guests. And we've got a few. We are all crowded around our little broadcast position here. And we all want to talk about, well, celebrations that are ongoing at the moment down at Dubai College, one of the best-known educational institutions here in the region. They've churned out sports stars for many years now. In fact, that is part and parcel of the conversation we're going to be having here. And the way we're going to do that is by speaking to teachers, current and former, and also students, current and former as well, giving us their thoughts on sport and the ethics of sport at Dubai College. And it is an absolute pleasure to have with us here the headmaster. Mike Lambert is over there in front of everyone. Thanks for organising this as well, Mike. Really appreciate it.
No, not at all, Tom. Thanks ever so much for having us on.
Now, listen, for those that don't know, for those that have had their head in the sand over the last couple of months, what are the celebrations going on down at Dubai College at the moment?
Okay, so it's a pretty big year for the school. We've been in the Emirate now for 40 years. During the course of the past 6 months, we've basically been gearing up as much as possible to reconnect with as many alumni as we can. That's both staff and students. So we've had a big 40th anniversary bash back in December with our afternoon tea, just to really kick off the celebrations. And then during the course of the last couple of weeks, we've been gearing up towards the 40th anniversary ball, which takes place at the Assateague tent on the Palm this weekend. So we've got about 900 guests coming, well over 100 alumni there, current parents and students, as well as staff members and former staff members as well.
And in terms of that, if people have not heard about that before, I mean, is it open to former alumni?
Yeah, well, it was open to former alumni. I mean, we basically looked around to find the biggest venue that we could in Dubai. We found it and we filled it. So it's standing room only at the moment. And basically, it's a wait list for those who want to come. So we're looking for anybody who's not going to come to hand their tickets back in so we can sell them on to alumni who do want to come along.
Amazing stuff. We're going to get more details from you on that a little later on in proceedings. But talk to us about sport, if you can, Mike. How important is sport and has sport been in years gone by?
So, it's a massive part of the school's culture. I mean, we talk about the four pillars of the school, which are sporting, creative, philanthropic, and academic. And I think, you know, the fact that we talk about sport as probably being the first of those pillars alongside that academic, shows how important it is for the school's culture. It's an integral part of what we do. It's part of the broader holistic education. You know, we're not just about churning out examination results for students, but we're about providing them with as many opportunities as we can, providing them the support to compete against one another, but also against the other schools out here, not just in Dubai, but across the UAE and also in the Middle East as well.
And Mike, what are the key ingredients to having a sporting sort of culture in the school? Is it down to the students, or is it sort of the teachers or the parents, and also great facilities here at Dubai College? What are all the factors that come into the sort of the culture of sport at Dubai College?
Yeah, I mean, I think the core thing really is it's all about sport for all. So it's about maximising the participation level. You know, the broader that we can make the base of that pyramid, the more people we can have participating, you know, the higher the likelihood is that the apex is going to be that much higher for the students. So basically from year seven upwards, we're trying to get every single student involved in sport at least two or three times a week, not just on the curriculum, but in terms of the extracurricular as well. And we have a very, very dedicated PE department. I often say, you know, at the school, I think the PE staff and the music staff are cut from a completely different cloth. You know, they give 110% of their time. They have to cram everything into those sort of cooler months between mid-October and March, that sort of Easter break. So there's basically fixtures every night of the week, every weekend. And there's a massive amount of support, both from the parents as well. Obviously, a lot of the fixtures that take place don't just take place in Dubai. They're over in the other parts of the Emirates as well, up in Abu Dhabi, but also in the other countries in and around the GCC. So the support from parents in terms of ferrying the sons and daughters around is massive. But basically, it's the really, really good-natured students that we've got. And, you know, they want to take part in absolutely everything that we've got going on. There's about 160 extracurricular activities that take place every week. A huge proportion of those are sporting ones as well. So it's basically it's the recipe. It's the combination of the parents, the students, and the staff, as well as, you say, the sporting facilities that we've got at the school.
Let's hear from more members of the staff, because Andy Jones is alongside you. He's the director of sport down at Dubai College. Andy, great to have you here on the show. No stranger to sport here in the region. And again, I mean, I'm assuming you're going to concur with the thoughts that you just heard there from your colleague alongside you. But what is it that sets Dubai College and the ethos of sport there apart, do you think?
Yeah, I'd have to concur. I think, first of all, sport for all has been huge. So, for instance, we've got our netball teams, we go from A all the way to H, so anybody who wants to play gets a chance to actually take part. Whereas at the top, then the elite ones, we try and push as hard as we possibly can, both domestically. There's a lot of schools now playing in Dubai, but we also benefit from schools coming in. Our cricketers are playing Eton 2 weeks ago, and also do a lot of touring. So we tour in Asia, we go across the National School Sevens in the UK for rugby. So basically we're very, very busy, both kind of Sport for All and with Elite.
Joe Bell is also with us. Now, Joe is the former director of sport at Dubai College, but has now moved on and has taken over as deputy at Latifa Girls. Joe joins us now. Thanks so much indeed for being with us.
My pleasure.
And again, I suppose the same question to you. From what you learnt in your time at Dubai College, is that something that has helped you sort of set sporting programs in other schools around the UAE?
Yeah, certainly. I think the experience at Dubai College taught me how important the parent body was, the support of the headmaster, Eric Parton, at the time, and some key staff. We had Graham Penson, who really set the links with primary schools and put Dubai College clearly on the map as a sporting centre of excellence.
Rugby has been fundamental to the success of sport at Dubai College and has helped to inspire rugby players across the region as well. Stuart Gibb is an old boy, former pupil of Dubai College, but also a rugby international in his own right as well. He was part of that famed Arabian Gulf side 2009, who went up against some of the best amateur players in the world. Stuart, thanks so much indeed for joining us.
Thanks very much.
When you were a student at the college, were you conscious of just how important sport was, not just to you but the rest of the school?
I've always been sporty growing up and stuff. It's always something I wanted to do. To be honest, I was more football orientated when I started, and it's only when Andy actually joined, I think when I was 15, that it's been all about rugby since then.
It's making
really
faces behind you at the moment. Yeah.
But Dubai, the facilities at Dubai College are unbelievable. I mean, it's a little bit different from when I was there. I mean, I graduated back in 2003. Yeah. And even then, like, I think, especially with Andy, rugby changed completely when Andy joined us, and the competition was great. I mean, we had a great time. I think we were the first UAE school to be an international school, if I'm not mistaken. We beat Glenarmon in the final of the Rugby Sevens, which was a fantastic achievement. From that, he introduced me to the Dragons, which then got me into the Arabian Gulf setup, and then I was lucky enough to play in an international World Cup. You know, and it's all thanks to obviously what I learned at Dubai College and playing in these facilities.
And were you conscious when you were part of that successful team at Dubai College, were you conscious of the fact that you were setting standards, not just, in school rugby here?
Not at the time, actually. I mean, kind of got caught up in it a little bit. We just, with Dubai College, always wanted to be the best. We were used to winning. But I think since then, it's come on even more. I mean, I looked around the facilities the other day and what they've introduced in terms of all the tennis, courts, the netball, the cricket, the football. I mean, it's come on so much. And it's not just sport as well. You're looking at the drama and the auditoriums. But it's good to be part of that history, though, I guess. And we've had some kind of stamp in it. On their past. So.
The legacy continues to this day as well. The current, were you captain of the college or not? Did you captain the side?
I don't know, actually. Did I captain the...
Did he captain
the football team.
All right. I don't think it wasn't
the rugby team, though.
But Andy never gave you the...
No, he never got me that one. Yeah, okay, we'll talk about that later on.
Well, one man who does have that that captain's armband at the moment is Ollie Tait. Ollie is the current under-19 rugby captain as well. Ollie, thanks very much indeed for being with us as well. Thanks for your time this afternoon. Talk to us about the season thus far. How's it been?
It's been a very compact season.
Don't worry about that. It just goes with the territory. It's fine.
Season out here. So we have 15 sevens and tens all packed in together. We started the season off with the sevens and we went on tour to Sri Lanka, which was an amazing experience as a team. We were very successful out there and came back and won the tournament up in BSAC. Which set us up for the pinnacle of Dubai rugby, which was the sevens. We made it all the way through to the final, but were unfortunate and we lost in the final to BSAC from Abu Dhabi. But that didn't stop us. We carried on going and we won the tens tournament back at DC and won the DASA League for, I think, the 16th time in a row. In the 15s, with just one loss to Rivals Desk.
Obviously are celebrating 40 years of Dubai College at the moment. Are you conscious of that sort of history here in the region and the fact that, you've got Stu here and amongst others who've represented the college for so many years? Are you conscious of that sort of history and continuing those standards?
Yeah, When I came to the school in year 7 and when new students come to the school and they want to partake in sports such as rugby, football, netball, they know the expectations of the staff and the parents and the whole Dubai College team really. Previously everyone's put in the effort and got us that reputation of being the top school, so it's really up to the new students to carry on working and trying to keep us there. And it's a really good environment to be in, trying to exceed to be the best.
Coaching staff all right? Harsh but fair?
Yeah, it's been very good. we've had Mr. Jones from the very beginning, from year 7, but we've also seen new faces like Mr. Jackson and Mr. Bard come over, who've been a really good fresh influence and have really helped us develop us as rugby players and also as people.
I want to talk to the netball girls in just a few moments' time, but I think what I'm conscious of is that we've talked a lot about rugby. We mentioned the football there just a minute ago. We're going to talk netball in just a few moments' time, but one thing that has astounded me is that the sporting talent across the board that Dubai College has churned out in years gone by. A number of ambassadors for Dubai College and the UAE now applying their trade in various corners of the world, none more so than our next guest who's going to be joining us live on the line now. A former pupil at Dubai College who pretty much broke every record that was to be broken motorsport-wise here during his illustrious career. Got recognised by a number of teams and, of course, disciplines the world over. And most currently, he joined the IndyCar Series in 2017, where he has continued that good form. Former Dubai College student and now one of the rising stars of IndyCar racing. Ed Jones joins us live on the line. Ed, thanks very much indeed for your time.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on. You know, it's great to celebrate 40 years at Dubai College. And, you know, it was a pleasure to go there. And as you said, hearing from some of the other people already on air, there's been a huge amount of success and a great college to learn.
Ed, what do you think? Do you think that your time at Dubai College has helped you achieve what you have achieved thus far in your racing career and the future that you hope to achieve?
For sure. You know, I would say probably, you know, when I was at Dubai College, you know, obviously the sports over there, you know, it's more, you know, football, rugby, cricket. And for me, I was playing quite a bit of football. Wasn't the greatest, but you know, it was just the attitude of, you know, how the sports were, how the teachers taught over there. You know, it's all out to win, very competitive, and you know that's very important for every sport you do. And moving across my racing, everyone was very accommodating, allowing me to, you know, participate in that, especially when it was during school days and I was traveling all over the world for it at the time. But yeah, the attitude of that, you know, always wanting to win, you know, played a big part in making me successful in the racing. And yeah.
Ed, just want to get a quick update while we've got you on the phone. Thanks for joining us. It's a massive season for you in the open car racing of Indy season. Just give us a quick update on how the season's going. I know you've got a new drive this year. And just looking forward to that Memorial Day weekend at Indianapolis, one of the biggest spectated sporting events, you know, in the world. Just tell us how exciting it is in the next month or so you're racing.
Yeah, for sure. You know, this year, you know, I moved up from my rookie year from probably the smallest team on the grid to arguably the biggest, or if not, you know, one of the two, with the most victories in IndyCar. So it's a huge step up for me, a massive opportunity. And it's gone pretty well so far. You know, first race we were eighth, second race we were running second until about 20 laps from the end. We had an incident, unfortunately. And then I finished third at Long Beach on the streets in California, which is our second largest race. And then the last race, we were on for another top five until the engine issue. But as you said, you know, going into May, this is the biggest month of the year for us, as we have the Indianapolis 500, again, our biggest race. As you said, you know, I think last year we had over 300,000 people there for the Sunday. So, you know, for me, that's the one I want to win. You know, it's the biggest one. Finished third there last year as a rookie, and now going back with the experience and a bigger team is a, you know, I've got another chance at it. And like you said, you know, it can really change everything for me. And I'm just really excited to get going with it.
Ed, I know you've got a number of fans over here who will be watching on with interest. All the best with the forthcoming races. All the best with your extraordinary career today and, of course, into the future. And thanks so much indeed. I know it's an unsociable hour over there for you to be joining us live on the line. I've got all the team from Dubai College here giving you a big thumbs up as well. So yeah. Big thank you to you, and thanks for your time, and all the best.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Big thanks to former Dubai College student Ed Jones there, who is now blazing a trail in IndyCar racing. We take a short break after that. Ah, yeah, Gemma, Sophie taught netball at Dubai College. And, of course, we'll have more from the teaching staff and those that have joined us as well. So please do stay with us. And if you'd like to send us any thoughts, then do text them through to us on 4001.
Oh, it's a fabulous goal!
This is The Grill, live from Barasti, with more sport, the latest headlines, and top debate on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Got Gemma Shand and Aya Flesho alongside me as well. We're talking all things Dubai College. We're talking about the impact that they've had on the sporting geography and landscape here over the last 40 years. Gemma, Aya, thank you very much indeed for your time. And now listen, tell us about the season thus far. I know that you two are the linchpins of the current netball team, is that right? So how's it gone so far?
In terms of the Dubai Netball League, where we play alongside adults, we're the top school. We finished in the top 7 of the league, I think. But yeah, we were definitely the top school in that league.
And is that because of the facilities? Is that because of the talent you got there? Is that to do with the coaching staff that you got down there?
We've got quite a rigid program at DC. It's called the High Performance Netball Program. We build up the players right from year 7 up to 6-1. So, yeah.
And again, we've been talking about the sort of legacy, the history that goes on there. Is that something that you think sort of inspires the current netball stars down there at Dubai College?
I think everyone just wants to do their best, and obviously DC's best has so far been winning. And there's like the whole... You hear, like, we've won the tournaments every year for so many years, and everyone just wants to meet the expectations, and they know they can win, so...
And in terms of those expectations, does that mean are the standards that high as well? Because you mentioned about the winning. Has that become...
No, I think it's just the fact that when we have a very team mindset that... Because netball, obviously, is a very team sport. Everyone has to do something, and we build, like, everyone has to take part and do their best.
Everyone. Everyone. We've also got Sophie here alongside us as well. Sophie Shamsuddin is with us as well. I mean, we've taught netball there as well, but there are so many different sports, aren't there, at Dubai College?
Yeah, Dubai College like provides sport for every single possible one that there is. And it's not only... there's some other sports. So there has been successful basketball tournaments, tennis is really emerging, football, and every year more and more students are beginning to play and represent international teams.
Sophie, is it quite difficult? I remember at school choosing between different sports, and whether back in New Zealand where I was, whether playing rugby or playing multiple of different sports, it's always quite difficult to juggle. How do you sort of choose what you want to focus on, or is it all about giving as many sports as much sort of opportunity as you can?
I think it's all down to the organisation at the beginning of the year. It's really well set up in the way that for a certain age group, there aren't many clashes. So on one day you'll do one sport, the next day you'll do another, and then you'd have your trainings, and then if you have a game day, you know that it'll be on that night. So you can schedule your extracurricular life around that. And it's actually very good because you get to not only socialise with all the other schools and all the students that are there, but then if you go to another sport, that there will be new students there that you can also talk to, and it creates a really nice community in the sporting life at secondary school, really.
Andy, I just want to get your thoughts on the sort of balance as well, because we've seen in recent years the growth of women's rugby, the growth of women's cricket games globally as well. Is that something that's also reflected through the school and the teaching?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we've got the traditional sports such as netball, all the girls play, but, you know, girls touch rugby is a new big sport coming along. We've got a girls cricket team. And really, any opportunity that comes our way, we're keen to push it, so all the kids have as many chances as possible, as many opportunities as possible to try new experiences, but also go as far as they can in the sports they play. So the girls here have been quite bashful. They play for Dubai College, obviously, but also they play UAE under-17s. They've made the UAE Open team to go on Tour de Gibraltar. So, again, it's pushing the kind of elite part as much as we can, giving opportunities and making sure everybody takes part in sport. Yeah,
because we're seeing such an extraordinary growth in netball here in the region as well. And does that help, the fact that you two are able to train at school yourselves, but also taking those standards further with the national team?
Yeah, it really puts together out of school and in school. And in school, at least every day, we're in the gym. It's always open for us, so that's just the extra training that we get in.
Ollie's alongside you. He's the man who is the current under-19 rugby captain as well. What about your rugby future, Ollie, once school comes to a conclusion? Have you got plans to continue the game?
Well, hopefully I'll be going to Bath University, all depending on home status, but hopefully I can get my grades and go to Bath. And, yeah, carry on rugby there. It's a lot different. I played my first men's game this week on Monday. And the physicality between the men's game and the under-18 game is very different. So I think it's quite a big step up going from school rugby to university rugby, because it's getting nearer and nearer to the full-on men's rugby. So it's going to be a challenge, but it's a wanted challenge. I'm
Stuart's
looking forward
there
to it.
Alongside you. He's a man who's been there, done that, mixed it with the big boys on World Cup campaigns as well. Should he continue his rugby?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. No, but yeah, going back, because I went back to him playing in the UK as well, it's different. They hit harder. Yeah, it's colder as well. It always hurts more when it's freezing. But no, you'll play. I reckon he'll play probably the rest of his life, yeah. Really. Even if he goes to university, come back here, he'll join up, definitely.
Question we ask a lot of guests on the show, Ollie, is the amazing thing about living in the UAE, you get to become friends and play sport with a lot of different nationalities. If you were back in the UK, you're there with all the Brits, but what many different nationalities make up sort of the rugby team? Are the guys from all around the world that you're playing with, which must be a really cool experience?
Yeah, so growing up in Dubai, you've always got that luxury of having loads of different nationalities in your classroom, and it carries on to the rugby pitch. So if we talk about our rugby team, we've got kids from Malta, UK, South Africa, Australia, and it's all like the broad variety of everyone. It's really good because everyone brings their own different style. You've got those running players, you've got the big hitters, you've got the skillful players, and it all gels in really nicely together. Whereas if you're in the UK, maybe they're all taught a similar style of play.
You'd be rucking and mauling all day there in the UK.
Yeah.
Interesting chat there. Let's bring Mike back in if I can, because Mike, so one of the things we've noticed, especially in this conversation, is the different nationalities, a very international approach. Is that something that's contributed to the success?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the school at the moment, we've got over 49 different nationalities at DC. It's always been the way, I think, you know, as a school, we bill ourselves as being, a British school overseas, but that's mainly down to the curriculum and the ethos of what we do. But in terms of admitting people into the college, there's absolutely no barrier to getting in, depending on your nationality. And I think, you know, to be honest, for these guys, being at Dubai College and being part of such a sort of multicultural, cosmopolitan atmosphere is what makes the school it is. And I think, you know, going back to the UK or heading over to the States is sometimes a bit of a shock. Because out here, you know, it's a very liberal outlook, both in terms of the sports teams that they have, also the classrooms. Then you go back to, you know, pretty much one single nationality, and it's very, very different. So, you know, I think these guys forevermore will be outward looking. You know, they'll be international in their outlook, and that's a huge part of what the school's all about.
We mentioned there the international element that has contributed to the success of Dubai College down the years. Our next guest, well, pretty much personifies that. A Maltese national who has set records, not just here in the UAE, but globally. Freestyle and butterfly swimmer specialising in short course events. He holds 5 individual national records, 2 of those in relays, and was one of the 5 athletes to represent Team Malta at the 2012 Summer Olympics. And did I mention as well, he's an old boy from Dubai College as well. It is a warm welcome to the grill this evening to Andrew Chetkuti, joins us live on the line. Andrew, thanks so much indeed for your time.
No problem, how's it going?
Very well indeed. Do you remember your school days at Dubai College fondly?
Yeah, it was a great time. Still miss it.
still miss it to this day. I mean, we've been talking to a number of the former students over the last half an hour or so. A lot of people saying that those school days helped contribute to their sporting success. Is that something that you'd share?
Yeah, I can definitely agree with that. I mean, my height of training at DC was at Dubai College, so I had Mrs. Adamson back then, who would let us use the pool and all that kind of stuff, and Mr. Jones, the dean. So definitely helped me grow as a swimmer and a person.
Well, Mr. Jones is listening on intently. He's live with us here at the moment as well. And Andy, let's just bring you into the conversation if we can. Did you recognize that that Andrew was a unique talent in many ways?
Yeah, I can safely say I contributed nothing to Andrew's swimming prowess. But no, it was very, very clear that when Andrew came, he was an outstanding student, obviously an outstanding swimmer. And with the school, but also the club work he did outside, he was going places. And to see him go all the way to London 2012 and represent his country was a remarkable achievement. So congratulations again.
Andrew, talk to me about that experience, competing for your country at an Olympics, obviously the pinnacle for any sportsman's dreams. Did it all sort of sink in at the moment, or has it sunk in since then?
It's definitely sunk in since then. So I competed also in Rio this past summer, so that's definitely grown on the experience. But London was probably a more fun experience just because it was just about leaving DC, and I had friends who'd come to watch and all that kind of stuff. So after the games were over, I was able to hang out with them and kind of catch up and all that kind of stuff, so it was a great experience.
And obviously you've achieved so many records in the pool as well. What about now, Andrew? Continuing the swimming? Have you got goals on more competition at the highest level?
Yes, I'm still training, not as much as I was. I'm currently getting my doctorate in physical therapy, so that's the main focus right now. I graduate next year. And then once that happens, we'll see. Maybe Tokyo 2020. I think keep it going until then. But right now, just getting the doctorate degree and then see what happens from there.
Well, you've got your work cut out there, that's for sure. And I'm sure you will be watching on with interest as Dubai College celebrates 40 years. They've got a big ball this coming weekend as well. Sure, your schedule and, of course, your academic work prevent you from coming to that. But if you've got a message for Mike, the head, Andy, and all the rest of the team down here, and all those students that have joined us today, what would that message be on their 40th anniversary?
Just take advantage of the experience and facilities and all the resources you have available at DC. You'll be shocked how fast it goes by. I still think it's like yesterday I was there. I still talk to all my friends from DC, and you'll just make relationships that you'll never lose. So just take advantage of it and enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Andrew, bless you. Thanks very much indeed for your time, my friend. Much appreciate that one. A big thanks to Mike and all the team for putting that one together for us as well. Joe Bell is alongside us here, former director of sport at DC. Joe, we've heard there from alumni. We've heard from those that have sort of taken the ethos of sport from the school further afield as well. Is that what unique about places like Dubai College?
Absolutely. I think Dubai College was and still remains a very special place for many of the reasons Mike has said, that it caters for the whole child, not just the sport, not just the academic. And it has from the very, very beginning, and certainly very privileged to have worked there. And to look around and see students that I taught then and to see how successful they have become today.
Really appreciate your time. Final word to you, Mike. Let's get your thoughts on it, because if people want to get involved, what's the best way for them to do that in terms of the celebrations?
It's a very good question. As I say, the ball is now filled. On Thursday afternoon and Thursday evening, we've got a 40th anniversary concert. It's taking place in the auditorium. Tickets are still on sale every day from the reception at Dubai College. So if anybody's listening, alumni who aren't coming along to the ball but they want to reconnect with the school, please do pop into Dubai College this week, pick up a ticket for the 40th anniversary concert. on that afternoon as well. Just before the concert, we've actually got an alumni tour of the school. So basically over the last 2 to 3 years, it's been quite a bit of redevelopment of the school site. Already the facilities are pretty good, but we're investing quite a lot of money at the moment in kind of refurbishing those, bringing them up to the 21st century standards. So I think if people haven't been along for the last sort of 18 to 24 months, there are a few things that they'll be interested to see. So I'd welcome anybody to pop along from about 2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon for an alumni tour of the site.
You can find all the information on the website as well, social media.
Yeah, on the website there's a special 40th anniversary page, and if you need to get in contact and you want to know anything, then just email headassist@dubaicollege.org.
Listen, really appreciate all your time. Mike, we haven't even got on to your abilities as a very, very talented chef as well. I was meant to be asking about that a little later.
I do cook a mean boiled egg and toasted soldiers, I must say. Yeah.
Save that for next time. Mike, really thank you. I know you've worked tirelessly to bring all these crew together. So thanks very much indeed to you. Mike's the head, but we've also been joined this afternoon by Aya, Gemma and Sophie. Thank you very much indeed to you girls. To Ollie Tate, who was alongside us representing the rugby team. Ollie, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much indeed to Stuart, who's joined us again. Stuart, good to see you. Thanks very much indeed for that. To you, Joe Bell, thank you very much indeed for your time. To you, Andy Jones, for all your tireless and hard work in sport, not just for Dubai College, but here in the region. Bless you, mate. Thanks very much indeed. And Mike, last one to you for setting this one up. Thank you very much indeed.
Tom, you're a star. Thanks ever so much for having us. Cheers.
Big thanks to Mike, all the team, and of course, Eddie, Ed Jones and Andrew Chitkuti for joining us live on the line as well. Right, apologies to the news team, we're a little bit late for it, but you know, it's not every day that you get Dubai College in the house, is it?
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.